Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society, the show where we talk about dining and food culture and so much more. Today's guest is Chef Galen Zamora, James Beard Award winner and owner of Moss Farmhouse in the West Village, a seasonal farm-to-table restaurant that opened in 2004. Zamora has an extensive fine dining background, including being the chef de cuisine at Boulay Bakery when he was 24 years old. Today, when he's not cooking or consulting at the Soundview Hotel in Long Island, you can find him at his home in New Jersey with his family. Chef Galen, welcome.
Thank you.
To A Hungry Society.
Thank you very much.
It is so nice to have you here.
It's exciting to be here.
I loved my meal at Moss Farmhouse.
Oh, great.
I am a big fan of fine dining, and I love what you do, so I wanted to have you on the show to talk about it.
Thank you.
So let's jump in. Can you explain Moss Farmhouse to anybody who hasn't been there?
Sure. You know, Moss is a fine dining restaurant, like you said, but I guess what makes us unique is that there's a little level of comfortable, level of casual that exists in it. It's farm to table, and the premise is let's have good food and good wine and good service, and that doesn't need to be outrageously pretentious or expensive.
Mm-hmm. And farm to table. I feel like that term has been...
It means nothing anymore.
It means something. It means maybe...
Everybody uses it.
Exactly, yeah.
There's some places, you know, that would criticize us for using it, which is fine. You know, but the point is that we do support and buy as much as we can from local producers. Mm. In New York, the reality is that seasonally, in the wintertime especially, that becomes harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
We're not so extreme that I don't have lemons because people don't grow lemons locally.
Right.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is that I choose to buy things like dairy that are made locally from a small farm, or pigs or chickens and shrimp and vegetables at an extreme cost, you know, upwards of four times what it should cost.
Oh, wow.
What conventional produce, foods, dairy costs, and I don't charge four times the price for it.
Right.
So some restaurateurs can say I'm an idiot, and maybe I am. But at the end of the day, that's really what farm to table should be about, is making those choices.
Mm-hmm. And you opened it in 2004.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like the New York dining scene was very different then. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Endlessly, I guess. It was very different back then. First of all, from a farm to table standpoint, it was there was not a lot of ability and inroads to do that on a consistent basis. There was a lot of work that had to be done. I think now it's good to see that a lot of restaurants buy locally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of people realize all the work a lot of people put into place to get systems to be more normal now. So that's exciting. But, you know, when we opened up we didn't have a budget, and we were not the most avant-garde of restaurateurs, you know, ever. But, you know, websites were newish, you know. There was not, you know, a big social media was totally different. Media in general was totally different. You know, I'm thinking about the reviewers or the press pieces that were impactful then.
Mm-hmm.
completely different to now. So,
so there weren't the like updates of like, this is opening in 2 weeks and 3 weeks and all of that.
No, there was that, but it was just print.
Oh, okay.
And the individual wasn't as empowered because the there was Yelp. I believe in 2004, Yelp was not as influential. It still made me cry, but it wasn't like a big important thing. There wasn't things like OpenTable. There wasn't things, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter so it's just different. What's important now is different. The New York Times was incredibly influential, and the New York Times the review could put you out of business and it could launch you. Mm-hmm. I mean, today you can't say the same for it, so it's really changed. And then this isn't the dining scene, but this is the restaurant scene. Today it's very hard to have a small restaurant.
Right.
Economically, it's really challenging. There's so much regulation. There's so much. We have to have HR people in our restaurant these days. It's hard to be mom and pop. We're very much mom and pop. Mm-hmm. So it's a big difference.
Did you always know that you wanted to own your own restaurant?
No. I knew from a very young age that I loved to cook. And when you're a kid, it's kind of like, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a baseball player. I want to learn to cook. But it wasn't, I want to be a chef. I want to own a restaurant. That didn't come. I was in my 20s before I really considering wanting to own a place.
Mm. And what made you feel that way? Like, what made you think, oh, okay, I could do this and own my own place?
Because I've always thought about, I don't know how to put this really. In my mind, I've always been thinking about opening places because I've always had ideas. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. When I grew up in Northern California, the coffee culture was a very strong thing back then. If you think about like Starbucks, if you think about in the early 90s in New York City, coffee was in that I Love New York cup
right
on the street.
Right.
I had grown up in high school drinking espressos and having that whole coffee culture and the pour over coffee. That was very normal to me. When I came here, I was just appalled by coffee. It was disgusting. I couldn't believe that people drank coffee like that. And I remember creating a business plan and thinking of opening up a cafe while I was a line cook at Boulay. I was scouting out places in Tribeca completely naively. But I just, for me, it was like, here's a need. This is what I want. I can do it. Mm-hmm. Not that it ever happened, but I think that just mentality took me into owning a restaurant.
What year was that you wrote out the business plan about the cafe?
That was like 94 or something, 95.
Oh, wow. that was a good idea.
It wouldn't have worked back then because no one would have paid that much money for coffee. People are paying 25 cents, 50 cents for coffee.
That's true.
They don't want to pay $5 for coffee. Today, you needed Starbucks.
Yeah,
true. You needed Starbucks.
True. So can you take me back to that time, like 94-ish, of working in kitchens and working at Boulay?
Sure. I first started working at Boulay. It was my internship from culinary school, and I didn't know anything about New York. I didn't know any restaurants, and I came from a small town. New York was very intimidating to me. I literally just wrote letters. I just opened up the Zagat Guide and wrote letters to all the top restaurants and wanted and tried to get a job, and ended up in Boulay. Mm-hmm. I really loved it there. I loved his food and his kitchen. I loved working for him. I did my internship there. I did not want to go back to school and finish my degree because I thought school was a waste and I was learning so much there. But, my mom made me. And then after we graduated, I went back and I just worked as hard as I could. I worked, you know, there was really great chefs that were in key positions in that kitchen. Mm-hmm. And some of them were there in as the AM saucier, and I would go in and learn how to make sauces with them. I would spend time learning how to butcher the fish and stuff with some of the guys. I would work lunch service, and I was a scrub. I didn't know anything. I was the youngest, most inexperienced cook there, but you know, I just worked hard. Mm-hmm. And I would stay all night long, and I would work 7 days a week, and you know, it was awesome. And the harder I worked, those older chefs like kept teaching me more and more, and it was right. Cool. So
that's great.
Yeah.
So the back of the house clearly shaped you, you know, as a chef. Were there any dining experiences that you had that kind of shaped you?
Well, I never ate then because I didn't.
You were
have,
too busy.
Well, that and I got paid peanuts, and you know, I lived in like a YMCA. But you know what was interesting is the front of the house. There was a great group of servers that we would go out, and they were awesome. It's funny because I don't see that happening anymore. But you know, when you think about like the main captains. Mm-hmm. And sommeliers that Boulay had back then, you know, because that restaurant was the top in the city. Mm-hmm. But we would go out and we would drink wine, and they would pull out these bottles from their collections, and they would buy us dinner. Mm-hmm. Because they, you know, they were making ridiculous sums of money and we were making nothing. but it was fun. I loved it. It was a really great culture, and I learned a lot from them, and I still have a lot of really great friends. Mm-hmm. That are servers there that was impactful because, you know, it started, one of the things is it really started teaching me about wine and food.
Right.
And that's important as a chef to be able to learn that. And it's hard to learn it.
Very true. Growing up in Northern California, were there restaurant experiences that you had that made you like fall in love with the restaurant industry or cooking or any of that?
To be totally honest, we spend every really important meal at Sizzler. And, you know, we got that great combo with steak and fried shrimp and stuff. We didn't, honestly, dining wasn't like a big part of my family growing up. Mm-hmm. But definitely there was some experiences cooking at home. My father had a very good family friend who was a chef in Southern California. Some of the experiences I've had there were influential.
Like, would you all like go down to Southern California, or would he like come to visit, or?
No, like the kids, we would go down and visit mm-hmm. him in Southern California.
And eat in his restaurant?
And, well, my parents were divorced. My father lived down in Southern California mm-hmm. and my father, didn't cook for himself. So he ate every meal of his life in restaurants. Mm-hmm. And he probably ate dinner at this man's restaurant every day of the week.
Oh, wow.
And it was an Italian restaurant, whatever. But, you know, the chef was, it was very good. The chef was great. Jim Lafort, you know, still a good family friend. You know, one of the reasons why I wanted to be a chef and came to New York to be a chef. You know, we had, you know, I remember a Thanksgiving. He's also an artist. He sculpted this beautiful clay pheasant, had baked the pheasant in it, brought it out on a gyrodome, gave a, you know, hammer to my sister to crack it open, and here's this thing.
Wow.
You know, which, you know, has led to dishes that I've put on the menu, you know, baking things in clay. So, you know, that certainly is a great dining experience.
So somewhere in between, you know, pheasant and clay and Sizzler, the steak
right.
and right. the fried shrimp.
Well, and that and, you know, traveling, you know, because we off air, we're talking about traveling and food. And, you know, I think one of the big points of interest to me is when we got to travel around a little bit more in my early teens. You know, a trip to Europe in particular was very influential. I remember just eating at some restaurants in Spain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of a sudden, you go from, like, Sizzler and Taco Bell, you know, you go to eating at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning in Madrid at mm-hmm. Tapas. Or you go to, like, you know, I remember eating at the Alhambra and having this amazingly elegant meal and just this amazing food and et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I didn't know this could exist.
This is different, yeah.
And when I first stepped in Boulay's kitchen, it was like, I had no idea food could ever be like this. Mm-hmm. This is amazing. Oh,
that's incredible. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of A Hungry Society.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food, and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients. Food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature. Food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
All right, welcome back to A Hungry Society. We're here with Chef Galen Zamara of Moss Farmhouse in the West Village. So, Chef, you recently reopened Moss Farmhouse after a fire in the kitchen, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Last summer, we had a kitchen fire in the middle of the night. Just, you know, electrical box just started a fire. Didn't seem like a mammoth amount of damage at the time, but in fact we ended up having to do a complete renovation. It took us 10 months to reopen, so
wow.
That was a pretty stressful time, and it was very exciting to be back, and especially here, you know, the fall's starting to come around, and the city's getting alive again, and it's getting back to normal, and it's really fun.
One of the things that I knew about Moss Farmhouse before I went there was how, like, beloved it was as a fixture in that neighborhood. So people were really excited to hear that it was going to reopen. And maybe they didn't know, like, how long it would take to reopen, but they were really happy when it did.
Yeah, I mean, we're so lucky because we have a lot of great just regulars, the neighbors, the community there. And a lot of support, and it was so good to see all the familiar faces and people come back when we opened.
That's great. So can you talk about how you try to create dining experiences at Moss Farmhouse? What's that process like?
Sure. I think that at Moss, we try to create a familiarity around, why can't I say that?
That's a hard word.
We want food to be familiar to people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to find the most extreme, rare, esoteric ingredient and prepare it, you know, in some crazy way.
Right.
But that, you know, that's in the food scene today, that's something that can be incredibly exciting. And, a lot of restaurants, chefs do that. It's pushing the needle and it's great. But Moss is more about like, do you love roast chicken? So do I. Here's a really good roast chicken. And what's really in, you know, good right now, and what can we do with it? And so I think that people enjoy that. I think that, you know, we also try and have a great wine program so that people can enjoy great wine and it not be too intimidating for them not have to feel like, you know, they need to be bullied by a sommelier or something into something. So that's the experience that we want to create for people.
When you go out to eat, which I don't know if you have time for between your two restaurant spaces, but when you do, where do you go?
I don't have time to go out to eat. It's the worst. And if I had time, honestly, I want nothing more than to be able to eat dinner with my family. I mean, it's just I don't get to do it. And, you know, when Moss was closed because we had a fire, I got to do it a lot. And it made not just me, my entire family, my kids just be like, oh, my gosh, we get to eat dinner with Dad. Like, you know, it's something that I think we take for granted in the restaurant. In the restaurant world, it's very, very hard. Mm. So the unsexy answer to your question is on my days off, I am so happy to just eat at home.
Eating at home.
And but the fact of the matter is in New York City, there's so many awesome restaurants. Every week something else is new opening up. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, so there's just an endless list of things, places to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm always behind. There's like a long list of places I want to go to. So,
yeah.
You know, hard to answer that in any other way.
Are there any places that you would not go to again? Like you had maybe like a worst experience ever in a restaurant?
There are. I don't want to name names.
You don't have to name names, although if you want to, you can.
Yeah, well, I will. But, you know, I remember an experience my wife and I had at an unnamed, very famous French chef's restaurant. There was a couple of things that were bad about it. One was they had just recently received this review that was glowing 3-star review. And while we were eating there, Moss got reviewed. And it was not as glowing review. And it was just steaming me from that standpoint.
Is that why you went? Or was that?
No.
Okay.
It was our anniversary, actually.
Okay.
The other thing was is that we were paying so much money and service was just so bad. You know, I just remember them, the waiters removing cloches and accidentally banging them together like cymbals. Ooh. And sending out the wrong food to us. And the food was so poorly executed and unimaginative. I remember like a piece of venison on a plate with like a bone that clearly didn't belong to the cut jammed in it. One baton of carrot was the only garnish. And I was just like, I can't believe this restaurant got a higher score than mine. I don't get it. What is going on? And it just like, it was a bad experience. It was more so about that than it was about the actual restaurant.
The bone in the different cut is, wow. Like that takes effort.
So, no, you can't believe it because I remember the bone clearly was like sandblasted and I can clearly tell that they just wash it like a utensil and keep reusing it. And it was just like, this is horrible. I can't even imagine as a chef wanting to do that. Yeah.
Wow. So kind of talking a little more broadly here about dining culture today. Moss Farmhouse, as you said earlier, is fine dining. And I've spoken to some people who said, oh, fine dining is like a dinosaur now. And, you know, casual is where it's at and all of this. What do you make of today's dining scene and dining culture?
Yeah, I hear people say that. I hear people say they think prefixes are dead, blah, blah, blah. But then I also, you know, there's always restaurants that are opening up that are fine dining and prefixes and do well and people love. There will always be a niche for it. So the thing that's changed when where I might call this confusion is that you can have excellent food in a more casual setting. Look at, like, here we are at the headquarters of that in Roberta's, right?
Right.
So that doesn't mean that people don't want fine dining. So, but we're in a sticky situation in the food world here, especially in New York City. Things are getting very expensive. Mm-hmm. And at the same time that restaurants get insanely expensive to operate, people are maybe less willing to spend as much money on food. And that's not a very good combination.
Right.
So people are more demanding about the food that they eat. They have more power in the individual voice than they've ever had before. So it's an interesting time.
So do you think, you know, fine dining is here to stay?
Oh, yeah.
It's not going anywhere?
No, there's no way. There'll always be people who want that level of elegance.
Mm-hmm. It's just part, like, an immovable part of our dining scene in America.
Yeah, that's what I think, yes. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. If you had to have a last meal in a restaurant, where are you going and who's eating with you?
Well, no question, my wife. We have, you know, I love traveling and eating with my wife. There's a list of places that she has been and a list of places that I have been that we're always talking about wanting to experience together. So there's a number of places like that, you know, that
what's,
I want to
What's one
her.
On the list?
Well, like, in so as an example, in we had planned a trip to Italy earlier this year, and then with the fire, and originally I was hoping to open the Halyard restaurant in Greenport at that time. We canceled it. But we were going to go, for instance, she's just has this love for the Amalfi Coast, and mm-hmm. we were going to go there. But another one is in Spain, because she's had these wonderful experiences in Barcelona that I've never been to. I've had wonderful experiences in San Sebastian that she's never wanted to go to. So there's a trip where, you know, we want to put together there.
Is it on the books already? Have you guys?
No.
Oh, soon. Soon. My fingers are crossed
yeah.
that you get to go soon.
Yeah.
So can you talk about your consulting project?
Oh, absolutely. It's very fun. You know, going back to my wife, like around 15 years ago, we met out in Greenport, New York, which is in the North Fork of Long Island. It's an awesome, small little town. We started to fall in love with it. We have spent summers out there very often ever since. And a great opportunity came up in a renovation of an old hotel and restaurant right on the Long Island Sound. And it was recently renovated. The hotel is the Soundview Greenport, and the restaurant is the Halyard. And fun, casual, seafood focus, a bar, event space. There's a lot going on. It's a fun, big project. Mm-hmm. And it's been very exciting. So we just got it open a few weeks ago.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the menu a little bit and what kind of dishes are?
Yeah, I mean, the big focus is on local wines, on local seafood, and the local produce that's out there. It's a mix of very familiar sort of American New England style seafood, lobster rolls, clam chowder, with a little more of retro, maybe interesting, you know, lobster beignets and Green Goddess dressing and salads, you know, some mm-hmm. kind of a little more older classic themed. Mm-hmm. And it's all in flux. I think when we opened up, I think we wanted it to have a level of casualness that people want more from. And so I feel like we're starting to raise the bar on our food as we change it up a little bit more to meet that demand. You always, as a chef, you got to listen to what people want, and then right. you just got to change. So. Yeah.
That's great. Do you have any other projects in the works that you could tell us about?
Well, you know, this has been a busy summer. Getting Moss back open earlier in the summer was key. Mm-hmm. And then the Halyard just going on. So right now I'm just focusing on those two places, because you can't just, like, open up and turn around and walk away. It doesn't work right. that way. So, you know. There's a lot going on for both things right now. So at the moment, just that. But always down the pipe, you know, that's the goal, is to continue to have some other fun projects. We've been talking about a book also, which is something that I really wanted to focus on now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, I got to get both of these restaurants running a little as best as possible right now before I can.
Excellent. Good. I think you should add a Sizzler fried shrimp and steak special at Moss Farmhouse. You're shaking your head now. Yeah. I think that's a great, great dish to add to the menu.
Yeah. We'll think about it.
All right. Well, thank you, Chef, for being a guest on the Hungry Society today.
My pleasure. It was my pleasure to be here.
So it was great to have you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.